Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth, leap, oh my goodness, what do our robot do to this, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O emperor. And the robot did this. Okay. I'm going to correct the robot here. There we go. Okay, shift F5. That does it. It's interesting, these robots. One time I was typing on the Bill Gates' word processor there, Microsoft Word, and I wrote, the cow, she did this. And then the automatic correct thing corrected it and said, no, the cow, it did this. So it's very, very interesting. Even in this, the level of the robots, there's a whole philosophical point that the cow is not a person. The cow is a thing. Yeah. So anyway, of course, this is the first two cantos. And I don't know if let me do this. Let me give a general perspective on the verses first. We're starting a whole new canto here. And then I'll come back to the specific purports here. So I'll drop this down. And drop this down. And we should get over here. Okay. So, okay. Can you see our new PowerPoint show?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. This is called Padapadma, the Lotus Feet of Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam's Cantos 1 and 2. And it's on our webpage in a Jayarama. Prabhupada says when Hanuman came to the ocean, the shores of the ocean, he didn't think for a long time, should I take along this or what should I do, what should I do? He just said, Jai Ram, and jumped. Okay. So our webpage is named Jai Ram. And because we're good Americans, it's called .us. JaiRam.us. I guess it could also be Uttama Shloka. So if you go there, you'll find the archives, and you'll find this PowerPoint show there, and it gives an analysis of the first two cantos, and a summary of the first two cantos. And of course, the first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet, and you recognize many nice things. So you may be walking around and see these footprints imprinted in the dust one day, and you should follow them. We divide the first canto into four major parts. Preface, introduction, okay, Sutta to the sages, Narada to Vyas, disappearance of Krishna and his associates, appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam. So 1, 2, 3, there's questions and answers about by Sutta and the sages, and then when they finish off, the conclusion is that Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation of God. But they ask, Vyasadeva had already written so many books. Why did he get the impetus to write more? So then, Sudha Goswami explains how Narada Muni came and had to preach to Vyasadeva to get him back on the right track, and he produced Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. Then after that, it describes the whole preface, the whole background, the whole history of Srimad Bhagavatam, why it was written, under what circumstances. And this is the first canto. And the first canto is a preface. Who's speaking? What are his qualifications? Who's asking the questions? What qualifications are expected of the student of this book? Under what circumstances is this book produced? What is the purpose of this book? So that's all in the first canto. In the second canto, we actually see the main speaker, Sukadeva Goswami, talking to the main student, Maharaj Pariksit, at the time of death, when there's a need to get a new incarnation for Kali Yuga, and beginning Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Since then, we've divided this middle part, disappearance of Krishna and his associates, into a few, like maybe three more divisions, and they're very natural how it flows chronologically like that. Okay. And the preface to the Bhagavatam, it's only 2 pages, but you can just look at it very carefully, because actually it's like a preface to Prabhupada's entire movement. You can print it, you can produce it, and this is who we are, this is what we're trying to do, because Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of Prabhupada's whole movement. Yeah. Now the introduction, the first part is the introduction to the first text. Now, what is the summum bonum? What is the cause of all causes? These things. Then after that, which is not too long, there's a 35-page biography of Lord Chaitanya, which in Spanish is printed as a separate little book, and it's so satisfying to distribute that. You know, such a nice little, somebody ask you, I know Aurobindo, I know Yogananda, but do you have a little biography about your Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And you can point them right to this. It's just a nice little thing to give classes on or something. So it's a very nice, concise biography of who is Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. And here again, this first canto is a preface, the purpose of the book, qualifications of the speaker, qualifications of the listener, circumstances under which the book was produced. Yeah. So we have speaker Sukadeva Goswami, listeners Maharaj Parikshit, circumstances the arrival of Kali Yuga, purpose is to give shelter in Kali Yuga. Okay. And I kind of maybe I'll skip ahead here because this first canto we've already gone over it, and that's basically what happens after Narada Muni gives impetus to Vyasadeva. Then it starts off, and Vyasadeva wants to give a little background. She starts talking about the birth of Maharaj Parikshit and the disappearance of the Pandavas to the sages at Naimisharanya. And that, of course, involves then how Maharaj Parikshit was almost annihilated in the womb. So there's the punishment of Drona, saving Maharaj Parikshit in the womb. And then he shouldn't go right ahead, but then he backtracks. And he discusses how Krishna was going to leave Dwarka, but he didn't because of Kunti's prayers and Yudhisthira's plea. And he talks about Bhishmadev, his disappearance. Then how Krishna did go to Dwarka. Krishna arrived in Dwarka. Then it backtracks on his original point. He gets back on his original point, and which is the birth of Maharaj Parikshit. And then the disappearance of Dhritarashtra. And after that, let me see if I got a moment in my memory here. Disappearance of Dhritarashtra. Then I think it goes ahead to the disappearance of Krishna, disappearance of the Pandavas, and then there's 3 chapters in the end where Maharaj Parikshit receives the age of Kali, punishment and reward of the age of Kali by Maharaj Parikshit, and Maharaj Parikshit cursed by a Brahmin boy, and Maharaj Parikshit meets Sukadeva Goswami, like that. So we have remote circumstances, immediate circumstances, and now in the second canto we're very much ready, you know, for Srimad Bhagavatam. And each of these cantos has a label, like creation, the cosmos, this and that. And if you see, these are the 10 points that are discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and probably, I guess it's almost every Purana. At the end of the second canto, these will be mentioned. Ashraya, creation by Asharga, Visharga, creation by Mahavishnu, creation by Brahma, creation by the Manus, special protection for the devotees, like that. And so these are there. And Sridhar Swami says that each canto deals with one of these, and one purport then. And then Prabhupada says that Jiva Goswami doesn't exactly agree with this, and he says that, you know, there many points are discussed like that. So I guess Srila Prabhupada is caught between Sridhar Swami and Jiva Goswami. So you see the Prabhupada says, this canto may be called creation. This canto may be called like that, you know. So he's kind of like, I guess, not, you know, not minimizing Sridhar Swami or Jiva Goswami. So that this title, I think this title is called The Cosmos or something like that. But you see, in the end, there's tremendous discussion of the cosmos by Lord Brahma. We divide the second canto into three parts. Okay, the first part is the Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, three chapters. Second chapter is second part is actually chapters 4, 5, and 6, Brahma to Narada. Okay, and actually chapter 4 is completely an invocation. There, before he starts to speak about the Bhagavatam of Brahma to Narada, Sukadeva Goswami just gives all these prayers, you know, begging permission, like that. So again, actually, it's like three chapters, Brahma to Narada. And then finally, pretty much, his analysis in the end is Vishnu to Brahma. Okay. In the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami starts his instructions to Maharaj Parikshit. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. In three chapters, he explains pantheism, Brahman, mysticism, Paramatma, and monotheism, Bhagavan, the complete science of God. Yeah. So you'll see in this first chapter that the Prabhupada, he uses this word pantheism several times. And pantheism can mean a philosophy of many gods, or quite related, it can mean seeing pan across. It can be seeing God in nature. So ecology movements many, many times are pantheistic. They see some spirit in nature. So this is Brahman, this is the Virat Roop, like that. You know? So we can call it pantheism, Brahman, or we can also call it Sat. The next mysticism, which in the West is this idea of introspection, meditation, contemplation, which of course is the Paramatma, or Chit. You know? God is everywhere, the spirit is everywhere, so the same spirit must be in me. So then I can start these processes of introspection, meditation, contemplation, seeing my mind, my things like that. And then I can actually realize that not only is there a spirit, but the spirit has form, the spirit has moral standards, it reacts. And then, of course, very naturally then takes us to the third one, monotheism, that there's a person behind all this. You know, Satchit Ananda, like that. So in the first three chapters, he covers all these very systematically. After hearing the complete science of God, Maharaj Parikrit was very satisfied, but he wanted to hear more, especially how God creates, maintains, and annihilates the world. Sukadeva Goswami agrees, and after offering preliminary prayers in the fourth chapter, in chapters 5-7, he explains how Brahma first spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Narada Muni. After hearing the Bhagavatam that Brahma spoke to Narada, Maharaj Parikshit is even more enlivened, so he asks to hear even more. Sukadeva Goswami then explains the original Srimad Bhagavatam as Vishnu spoke it for Brahma. The canto ends with the sages asking about the meeting of Vidura and Maitreya. Yeah. In summary, 1, 2, 3, Sukadeva to Maharaj Parikshit. 5, 6, 7, 4, 5, 6, 7, Brahma to Narada. And 8, 9, 10, Vishnu to Brahma. Yeah. Did you notice that Srimad Bhagavatam is presented 5 times in the first 2 cantos? Vishnu to Brahma. Okay. That's 8 to 10. Narada to Brahma. With a parampara here. Vishnu to Brahma. Brahma to Narada. Narada to Vyasa. Vyasadeva to Sukadeva Goswami. Okay. Now that doesn't occur. Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit and Sudha Goswami. Okay, that's two. So 2, 8 through 10, 5 through 7, 4 through 6, and 1 through 3. And again, it's the same Bhagavatam. Of course, when Vishnu spoke to Brahma, it's only four verses. Yeah? And when Brahma presents it to Narada, we start seeing a lot more discussion about how the universe is created, the Virat Rup, the demigods, the elements, you know, what the Virat Rup feels like. Because Brahma's an engineer. Okay? So different perspectives like that. And this is the Bhagavatam. You see many times in basically three chapters, the whole thing is presented. What is this world? What is the spiritual world? And how to go from one to the other? And then it's the teacher asks, do you have any questions? And so sometimes the students answer, yes. Please tell me about your life, how you realized this. And okay, any questions? No? Okay, and then part of the Bhagavatam, almost every time, now that you've understood it, go and explain it to other people in terms of your own ability and nature. So that's the first two cantos, the Lotus Feet of Krishna. Oh yeah, so I finally hear Sutra to the Sages and I'm a Sharanya. And that's the first three chapters for verses like that. Okay, here's our address and so on. Okay. So I guess at this time, let me just stop for a second and ask any questions about this or anything? Comments, real quick questions before we go to the actual verse?
Okay, I have to unmute everybody. Which I just did. I want to say that I thought that was so brilliant. I loved it. At least for me, this kind of stuff that I can really focus in on. You know, so it clears everything up. You know, gives you a broad perspective of what's going on. It's hard to do that on your own, but this is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Part of this is that it's there in Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada says, we may note with profit in the last three chapters, blah, blah, blah. But I think that we like it so much because we've been trained in this whole industrialized analytical thought process. And Prabhupada is a secondary thing. He's more interested in how the flavor of things and how the bhava. And so that's why for him, that perspective, and this is happening, he said this and that. So, but for us Westerners, yeah, we have to have it. If we can make a machine, a little mental machine out of something, we think we've understood it.
You know, I was going to say that because, now, at least I can speak of myself, our attention span is so short. To go through the work, it seems haphazard. And that's only because we have the attention span of a goldfish.
I think we're a little above a goldfish, a little bit.
But when you see how this whole thing is put together, you know, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, and then you can start doing things like, you can read like one of the Bhagavatams and get it, and then you can compare it to another one, and you can see, okay, here it's presented like this and like that. And of course, the whole thing is to take it to heart, you know, and see what's more important for you. Okay, I guess then let's go ahead and mute everybody. Oh yeah, okay, yes, sir.
Okay, in your outline, the last page of the outline.
Yeah.
In your fifth or fourth telling of the Bhagavatam was to be asked to Sukadeva. So you're basically saying doesn't occur, meaning it's not explicitly described.
Oh yeah, it occurs, but it doesn't occur in the first two cantos like that.
There is one verse, how it came to me, that class, and it's kind of stated there in one verse, and I can't find it right now.
It's
218. Okay, thank you very much. 218. Okay. Yeah, he imparted it to his son. Yeah, okay. Okay, so our time is short here. Let me go ahead, and then if you can, I guess, mute everybody, and I'll go on to the action. Okay, so I guess
we're ready.
Today's verse. Here it is. Okay. So then what's happening now in perspective is that we know who Maharaj Parikshit is. He's a heavy dude. And now we know who Sukadeva Goswami is, and he's a heavy dude. And one place Prabhupada says it's just a formality that one of them became guru and one of them became disciple. He said, practically speaking, either one of them could have been the speaker and the other one could have been the questioner. So both very elevated people. And the audience is very elevated. And all the kind of common people out of terror have just retreated, seeing who's there, you know, common people. And so now very serious, very grave, you know, wonderful. So then Maharaj Parikshit, at the end of the first canto, he asks this question, what is the duty of a man during his life, and especially the time of death? And then that becomes the basis, Prabhupada says, of the whole Bhagavatam. So in the second canto, he starts the Bhagavatam class like we do. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Then as I remember what he says first, he says, your question is glorious. This is the kind of question that people should ask. You know, not where is the 7-Eleven, where is the this or that, you know, food market or something, you know. Yeah, where is the war? And then he goes into a contrast, and of course, Donadhar Maharaj, I got this from him. You see that the Gita, Bhagavatam, again and again, the flow involves a contrast so many times. Talking about the good people, what their result is, then talking about the bad people and what is their result. And so he says, your question is glorious. It's the most important thing. But in contrast, it is the persons who are materially engrossed on the opposite side. They talk about everything, but they don't talk about, you know, about the absolute truth, you know. So, and he goes on like that. And so this is important. In the Isopanishad, it says that one should cultivate knowledge of the spiritual world. I'm going to go over and close the door. Okay, so Isopanishad, which says we should cultivate knowledge of nescience and science side by side. What that means is we should cultivate knowledge of the negative aspects of the material world. Doesn't mean we should, you know, try out the negative aspects. But we should cultivate knowledge of why the material world is bad. And we should try to cultivate knowledge of why the spiritual world is good. The Sahajiyas only want to cultivate knowledge of why the spiritual world is good, and the Mayavadis only want to focus on why the material world is bad. And but Prabhupada says if you don't focus on why this material world is bad, then eventually you'll take the spiritual knowledge as fairy tales. So here Sukadeva Goswami is pointing out that these people who don't take any concern for this topic. Yeah. In the revealed scriptures, there are two nomenclatures for the householder life. One is grihastha, so griha, house, sta, staying fixed, and the other is griha medhi. The grihasthas are those who live together with wife and children, but live transcendentally for realizing the ultimate truth. The griha medhis, however, are those who live only for the benefit of family members. extended or centralized, and thus are envious of others. I lived with my father for quite some time, and my mother. At that time, there wasn't much divorce going on, you know, only extreme circumstances. I remember, actually, it was very, very difficult to get a divorce when I was a child. Like maybe like 1958, 19, maybe I don't know when it started, maybe it became more liberal, maybe in the 60s. Yeah. And also, I remember, too, that ladies still wore black, you know, when they were widows. So even within so much culture. So our family, of course, living together, and there's different things happening. We didn't have much philosophical discussion in the family. My mother was a little more like culturally inclined, like that, and religious in some degree. But at one point, my father, I think when I was in college, he was offering to pay for the master's degree if I wanted to go on and get a master's degree. And he said his philosophy was that I take care of me and mine. And you know, he was a nice person. Didn't want to hurt anybody else, you know. But that was basically his simple philosophy in life. And then everybody should do this. Everybody should take care of me and mine, like that. So he was basically a nice Griamedi, you know, and so on. Some perspective. Also, one time he told me his philosophy on religion, which was we're born, and then we die. You know, it was a dust to dust. And that was basically his idea. And then he went on like that, and basically without too much thinking process. And so when I became a devotee, it really, really, you know, kind of shaking people up and so on. But it probably says here, this is the Griamedi. And again, this brings up the point, they may not be bad people. They may live nicely in society, because that facilitates, you know, the taking care of themselves and taking care of their immediate family members, which gives them satisfaction. The word Medhi indicates jealousy of others. The Griamedis, being interested in family affairs only, are certainly envious of others. Therefore, one Griamedi is not on good terms with another Griamedi. And in the extended form, one community, society, or nation is not on good terms with another counterpart of selfish interests. Let me say something is missing here. I take these from the Vedabase.com, and they're definitely like phrases missing. On the Nectar of Devotion in the Vedabase.org, the older one, practically speaking, the first paragraph is missing on every single chapter of the Nectar of Devotion. Sometimes two paragraphs, sometimes it's there. But in most cases, at least the first paragraph is missing on every single chapter of Nectar of Devotion in Vedabase.org. There's a whole kind of reason why they didn't update it. But Vedabase.com, and the files are more new, like that. Yeah. Of course, we're trying to be happy. You know, we're trying to be servants. And when we can serve, we feel happy. So we can serve our senses. Our senses are happy with us. We feel good. Oh, I served my senses. And then we extend it, and we see, okay, my children are well-dressed according to the social standard. My wife is well-dressed. In South America, everybody would go to the Plaza de Armas on like Saturday night or something. And there would be a little place to set up, you know, with outside restaurants with their tables and people with some music playing in different places. And people would walk around, you know, maybe take your meal and go for a little walk around. And when the mayor is there with his family, and you tip your hat to the mayor, and he says hello to you. And you know, you have your wife on your arm, and she's dressed up, you know, according to the fashion, nicely. And your children are running around at your feet, and they're properly groomed, and this and that. And you show off, you know, your social opulence according to the mode. Prabhupada says decorating the house and ornaments. This is not in the mode of goodness, it's in the mode of passion. He said, but at least it's civilized. It's civilized like that. Yeah. But you don't feel satisfaction. That's the point, because we're not, we're serving the senses, we're serving the extended senses with so much complicated idea about what is society, what is proper, how should ladies dress, and how does a distinguished, they'll call it distinguished lady dress. Now, I see all these different forms, wearing bustles, wearing gigantic hats, you know, and yeah, so much, you know. And so, yeah, but you don't feel satisfaction even though you extended it and then used so much intelligence. So what happens, you know? You become envious that the other Grihamedis are apparently getting more satisfaction than you. So you want them to die. Anvidi, you're against, you're not just jealous of them, you want them to die like that. Then of course it goes to an entire nation. And of course the nation is personified by the leader. I don't know who it was. Maybe it was Carl Jung or somebody else. They said when they were talking to Hitler, they realized that to a large degree, his personality was completely was submerged. That when you were talking to him, you were talking to the nation. Of course, the nation was very much absorbed in his consciousness by force and by charisma and by karma. But they realized that when they were talking to him, you weren't talking to him. It's like if you go and talk to Barack Obama, you'll realize this man, he can't actually be himself. You know, continuously the Secret Service is there. Everything he says is being recorded like that. And so in Shakespeare, when a messenger comes in to talk to the king from Norway, then the king of Denmark says, "How fares our cousin Norway?" So the king is, Achintabheda Bheda-tattva, the king is simultaneously the country and not the country. And if you insult the king, you've insulted the country like that. You know? And so the same way, the big leaders who get in these positions, nobody wants to be the president of a third world country. You know? How disgusting, how embarrassing. So they want to push their citizens with, you know, sexual propaganda and promises, promises of prestige, promises of toys, gizmos, you know, so many things, artificially to work like asses, to torment their senses, which they cover with tobacco and those kind of things, and sexual, you know, lascivious sexual activities, to produce a first world country, you know, with big airplanes, big highways, very, very big buildings, you know, autos. You know. And so then as a result of that, we see, you know, different countries and their leaders are envious. And the Prabhupada says, you know, the communists, the Germans, they had to expand beyond all belief, you know, and World War II. Maybe they should have taken back Austria or something, and if they could leave a little peacefully, maybe they could have adjusted there. But after that, it became all of Europe. Then it became all of Asia, all through, Russia, like that. And way beyond what they even needed. And the Japanese had the same thing. They wanted to extend their empire all the way to Midway Island, like that. At least, maybe not quite that far. On the opposite side, all the way through Indonesia. You know? So Papa says, in one community or one society, not on good terms with the others. And the British and the Americans were trying to restrict the Japanese so they wouldn't give them the petroleum they needed to expand their industrialization to become a first world country, which was all in Indonesia. And so then without that, they couldn't compete. So they became envious of the opponents and they started the war, you know, to come up with the, basically to establish prestige. In the age of Kali, all the householders are jealous of one another because they are blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth. They have many subject matters for hearing, political, scientific, social, economic, and so on. But due to a poor fund of knowledge, they set aside the question of the ultimate miseries of life, namely miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. So in the beginning you're born, in the end you die, and in between you have diseases continuously. I was noticing I would have one disease, one discomfort, and after a while it would go away, and there'd be maybe just a few days, you know, of no problems. And then something else would come. I would, you know, step off the porch and miss the stairs and pull a tendon and be painful to walk without a cane for maybe a week. And like right now, I came back from Mexico, very intense programs. We have intense programs here. The weather's changed, so I got a little fever and hoarse throat. You know? And then before that, my feet were swelling up. I had edema, and that went away. So, but finally, old age, the diseases start to get more dramatic or something. And finally, death is the whole collection. But people try and forget this with so many snack foods and, you know, social parties and glorification and stimulation for the mind, that the mind is gratified by this environment and this respect for the senses and my opinions. Huh? And they forget the ultimate problems like that. We forget it, to speak of them. Factually, the human life is meant for making an ultimate solution to birth, death, old age, and disease. But the Griha Medis, being illusioned by material nature, forget everything about self-realization. The ultimate solution to the problems of life is going back home, back to Godhead. And thus is stated in Bhagavad Gita 8.16, the material miseries of existence, birth, death, old age, and disease are removed. Yes. So, let me mention it here, because I see one danger for all of us, maybe right here in this Sangha, is that Adoshvada, Sadhu Sangha, Majjana Kriya, Narta Nivritti, and we can come to that stage, and you know, we can follow the four principles, and we can restrict our sense gratification within a civilized fashion, and our devotional services come to the point where maybe we are, you know, twice born. We're either functioning as brahmanas or as administrators in society, or as, you know, people in charge of seeing the economic development goes on like that. Okay, but that's only Brahman. It's a very general sense of the absolute truth of going back to Godhead like that. And so if we can turn ISKCON into Indraloka, or else we have probably, you know, within ISKCON it's a very big society. So there are different branches or sections of ISKCON. You know? And so some communities amongst themselves and their associates and who we associate with, you know, basically we're living in Indraloka. And everybody's very religious, very polite, and it's even very unusual mystical experiences. And, you know, we discuss books about the new theory of the pyramids and, you know, Mesopotamia. What else we got? You know, Kung Fu Panda, you know. And we're learning to eat like very, you know, celestial diets like that of gratification. And so, and in our japa, everything else may be also psychological things and enjoying Krishna's pastimes like a kind of like a movie or something, you know. So in this way, you know, we have to be careful that our subject matters for hearing and chanting don't get caught up on this level, you know. And we don't forget the ultimate process, and we become, the Prabhupada says, a sannyasi can become attached to a few things that are the possessions of a sannyasi or a certain temple. He goes on to say that this is nothing like the attachment that we usually develop in household life. You know, sannyasis meditate on the perfect pair of shoes and the perfect suitcase. That's what I'll tell you now. So sannyasis meditate. Maybe the more sannyasis there are in our heart, remember. You're always thinking about, wow, I need a pair of shoes that will be go on and off quick, that will be good in the snow and the rain, but it'll also be good in the other weather, that I can wear to preaching programs. I can also wear the temple. And I want a carry-on bag that will be light, so when I'm in transit, I'm going to drag the thing around. I want it so it'll open up quickly, but I also want to be able to include a complete change of clothes. So sannyasis are meditating on their shoes and their luggage. But then grihasthas, you know, when they're engaged there, are meditating on their cars and their houses. You know, the perfect, should I get a pickup truck? Should I get a sports recreation vehicle? You know, should we get two cars? You know, should we get a hybrid? You know, should, and what kind of house should we have? Where should it be? A room for the kids, this and that. You know? So you see, yeah, you know, there are options for, you know, there are, being in sannyasa ashram does offer some more possibilities to be in the mode of goodness. It doesn't mean you're taking advantage of them. Yeah. And then the possibility, of course, is to go beyond that. Because if you die in pure sannyas consciousness, I guess for 100 lifetimes, you're going to become more Brahma. You know? And Brahma still has his headaches. The process of going back home, back to God, is to hear about the Supreme Lord, his name, form, attributes, pastimes, paraphernalia, and variegatedness. Foolish people do not know this. Yeah. They want to hear something about the name, form, etc., of everything temporary. And they do not know how to utilize this propensity of hearing for the ultimate good. Jai. So Prabhupada ki jai. So that's our little presentation. So now, any more comments, questions, complaints?
Just give me 1 second here. Sorry, my screen just did something weird. I'm trying to get back to start meeting and off. There we go. So now everyone has been unfettered. You can unmute yourself if you have a question or a comment.
Yeah, the last line of the purport is missing.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is it?
Misguided as they are, they also create some false literatures about the name, form, attributes, etc. of the ultimate truth. One should not, therefore, become a Grihamedi simply to exist for envying others. One should become a real householder in terms of the scriptural injunctions.
Wow. Yeah, you know this, right? Every time we go through these purports, you go through them like after a year or two or 3 years, as your other studies, it's just so much more profound, you know, all the complications like that. Yeah. Somebody's banging on their computer. Don't bang on your computer with your microphone open.
So it's like they create all these movies and books just to distract people from the real subject matter.
How many videos are there on YouTube?
Oh, innumerable.
Actually, they have a number. I forgot what it is. I think even Wikipedia in English, I looked at it last night or something, I was looking for something. I think Wikipedia has 1 billion entries now in English. 1 billion, like that. Even if you look up your own name, just the inner like, you know, the engine search there, your own name, sometimes it's amazing. You know, not just other people with your name, but you show up. I mean, you show up in some funeral society or something, or some high school, you know, reunion book, you know. It's just amazing, you know, how much there is, you know, of this. Wow. And you find some angle on it, something, and that goes on for some time, some gratifying thing. Then you start to get disgusted with it, bored. Unlimited topics. You know. And so Srila That's something I think about Srila Prabhupada, is Srila Prabhupada is so amazing, is that he's simply hearing about Krishna. Simply, he's so sober. And then he's showing us that that's it, let the passion go away. And then once you're so sober like that, anartha nivritti nishta, then ruchi, then you actually start to get, a transcendental taste, for hearing about Krishna. You can cultivate it, just like you can cultivate your garden. You can grow different things here, there. And you can actually cultivate consciously your taste in Krishna consciousness. And because of that, then you can because you've cultivated a nice taste for your mind, intelligence, then you can become attached. Ruchi asaktis. Like that.
Maharaj, yesterday we had a whole discussion about the invocation verse, who spoke it, where did it come from. You sounded pretty sure that that was Sri Gadev Goswami speaking that. Yesterday we were coming up with all kinds of philosophical speculations. Maybe the editors put it in, maybe Prabhupada put it in, maybe Sri Yasadev was that, maybe this, maybe that. And, but in the purport it said either the speaker, the hearer, or anyone who chants this verse. So I guess it really doesn't matter. But you sounded like you're pretty confident that that was Shukadeva Goswami.
I don't know anything else. It's not that I'm greatly knowledgeable about the subject, but that's just that I never thought of anything else like that. Yeah. But it could be. Yeah.
What was interesting is that after the invocation, then the text number one begins Sri Sukha Uvacha, which because when I gave the class on the invocation, and I was just assuming that was in fact Sukadeva Goswami speaking, but then the devotees brought up, well, maybe it wasn't, and I had to sort of agree with them that. Because if you look at the first text, not the invocation, it begins Sri Sukha Uvacha. They think they would have said that in the previous. It kind of threw us off. There was a lot of good reasoning either way. It was an interesting, kind of an interesting discussion that went on.
Also in the Isopanishad, the same way too. There's invocation, and then I think that's attributed. Madhvacharya says Isopanishad was spoken by Swayambhuva Manu. And later in Swayambhuva Manu's prayers, the same thing is there. Yeah. That's one thing that, Sri Dayananda makes this point, other people too, that the South Indian texts, the actual Samhitas from the Vedas, are pronounced in a totally precise fashion. They're memorized one after another. Then the students, little boys or girls, I guess, even boys mostly, I guess, they memorize them straight through. Then they memorize them backwards. Then they memorize them skipping like a verse or something like that. And so that way, if you know computer science, the thing is being passed down. So it's practically speaking, it's impossible, not to have precisely the same words and with the same accent and stuff like that. Because they all get together and chant them maybe like every 7 years. There'll be maybe like, 1,200 pundits or something, all chanting the Rig Veda or something. And so people comment, the possibility for 1,200 people to all make the same mistake at the same time is, it's almost impossible. So therefore, the texts that we have of the Rig Veda and things like that are the same things that have been spoken for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. But the Puranas, they don't aim at that. When Suda Goswami finishes telling them, they say, okay, now we see why Vyasadeva wrote it. So please tell us, what is the whole Bhagavatam? So at the end of chapter 6, he says, Aditsvaram, I forgot the actual Sanskrit now. I shall now try to make you experience this as I experienced it. So he's not going to tell them the same thing. He's going to look at them. He's going to see what's going to happen. He's going to take out things. He's going to emphasize things. If they figured out something, he's not even going to talk about it. You know, I will now try to make you experience this as I experienced it. Because the whole idea is to get the consciousness, the perspective, the bhava. And once you've got that, that Krishna is the cause of all causes, everything else, then we don't, the other thing is, okay, you may have to learn some kind of specific mantras to cook your soup or, you know, turn your enemies into frogs or whatever is necessary, like that. Yeah? But the main thing the Puranas are trying to do is to communicate this bhava. You know? And so therefore, who spoke what when, they'll just go right into two varahas and just mix them together without even telling you we're talking about the white varaha and the red varaha. Yeah? Because it doesn't matter as far as our purpose is concerned. Yeah.
Yeah. The subject matter of the expansion of the Bhagavatam is really interesting. You were touching upon that. And I was thinking that it's expanded, Prabhupada expanded it so much with his purports, that, and we really don't make distinction between the translation and what Srila Prabhupada says. This is all for us. This is all the Bhagavatam. He expanded it immensely.
And also in some ways you see Hridayananda Maharaj's purports, because Prabhupada also condensed it, because he would look at the the commentaries of Jiva Goswami, I guess, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I don't know who they are, there's Vishwanath Chakravarti. One picture you see Prabhupada dictating, looking at a big book, and as I understand, that big book was all the commentaries of the Acharyas. It was published, and that's how he was looking through it. He says, in this regard, Jiva Goswami says, in this regard, Sri Goswami says. And so people were criticizing Hridayananda Maharaj, and his purports were longer than Prabhupada's. And he said, what can I do? He said, Prabhupada was eliminating, you know, different things that the Acharyas were saying. Like just now we have Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentaries translated by Bhanuswami completely. But you see that Prabhupada didn't include all that. You know, he included stuff that he thought was relevant. And so Hridayananda Maharaj said, I feel like, you know, how could I, you know, eliminate what the Acharyas are saying? So Prabhupada also, like you're saying, Prabhupada added things, little bits to glue it together, but also he also eliminated some of the commentaries of the Acharyas. So it's very, very interesting, Prabhupada's position, like you're talking in terms of the expansion of the Bhagavatam. Very interesting.
Wonderful. And here in our discussions, we're expanding it further.
To talk about Kung Fu Panda.
We're taking it to the next level. We probably the translation, Prabhupada's purport, and now we're all expanding upon it. So it's so wonderful. Because it's no limit to how far it can expand.
I arrived in Vrindavan one time at Krishna Balaram Temple, and you know, when you get there, it's just a whirlwind of like spiritual activity, you know, sometimes. And so, I didn't know what to do. There's just so many like spiritual options. Yeah? So I just started chanting Hare Krishna. Then I realized, my God, the Maha Mantra is to guide us how to distinguish between Maya and Krishna. But if you want to take shelter with the Maha Mantra, will also guide us how to distinguish what particular aspect of spiritual life is for us. And so the same way, my God, it's like you're saying, that there's so much work needs to be done in terms of the modern society. We're having these educational meetings here, and it's so intense. It's kind of come to the point where it looks like we can really make a franchisable primary school, just like the Montessori schools or the, what's the other one, Waldorf school. And so it can all be set up, so if you want to have a school in your temple community, you contact these people, and they say, okay, here's a survey. It's free. And you get it back and they say, okay, forget it. You're not going to be able to do it. Or, yeah, it's going to be really good. You can do it, but you need to adjust this, this, and this. And here's the services we provide for this amount of money. And you can make up a totally financially a primary school with very good curriculum. And also that will be acceptable to other people who are religious and can put their kids into it like that. And so it's just like the discussions now with the devotees is already happening in some places. So maybe in Texas, Houston, and get it set up like that. And so there's so much, but look at it, there's so much work that still needs to be done just from the fundamental principles. Because some people, you see that exactly what I'm talking about, many of the community members that come every Sunday, they're not initiated, they want to put their kids in the school, and they're temperate in the terms of the four principles. They maybe, if they visit somebody else's friend's house, they may tolerate some sabji with some chicken in it, you know, like that, eating it, maybe picking out the chicken, you know. But they want their kids to have a good material education, you know, so they can, like that. So it's a whole discussion that bases the philosophy about where do we draw the line, what do we do, how do we adjust, you know. So so much work to be done. But I guess we should go now. It's 12:45 here, and we got to do our Gayatri and then take prasad and try and get ready for some more, another round of educational educational battles like that. So, Shri Prabhupada ki jai. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Say hello to Mother Irmala for us. Aloha.
Oh yeah. Did she give class yesterday?
No. She's now that she's traveling, she's no longer giving class. It's too difficult.
I'm walking across the room here. She's on the other. The sannyasi palace here is divided by one big section. She's at the other door over there. I guess like that. Okay, she's in her cave. Okay, but I'll tell her. Everybody from Hawaii says hello.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you so much.
Jai.
Thank you, Balabhadra.
Oh.